The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and today we are going to be talking about the hot topic of how do you really leverage your expertise to capture and increase market share in a fragmented industry? Huh? Now think about that. I'll say it slowly. Now, some of us are in businesses where there's only one or two players, and everybody knows the model, and you're trying to follow what they're doing. And then the majority of us are in the opposite situation, where there are so many vendors, and there's so many different services, and so many different products. There isn't one pattern to how things are done, and so you have all these, like, bottom feeder behaviors. So one of the skills in growing the business can be, how do you make sure that you find a way to unify a marketplace, at least one way? Now, it would be nice if it's around you, if it's around your way of doing business or you found a new technique. Frankly, I think legislators are trying to do this. They're not trying to do it to grow companies, but a lot of times legislators, when they're regulating, and government officials, when they're regulating, they're trying to unify an industry so that there's some standards that make some sense. Sometimes professional associations, trade associations do this when they're setting standards or doing certifications. That's a unifying trend. And believe it or not, if a company is in the lead on a technology or on an approach or on a method, that can also be something that unifies the business. And if you do it, now just think about that. If you take that kind of leadership position, you don't have to necessarily be large. In fact, a lot of times the companies that are able to do this are fairly small. They have an expertise, they have an idea, but they have to think really large, and they have to do it fast. If you're going to grow your business through reducing the fragmentation in an industry and actually addressing it, you got to have your act together. So a lot of the companies that I've seen that have done this, they've taken their time to go back and make sure that they know the key players. They've done a little research. You know, say, for example, if you really wanted to reduce the fragmentation in healthcare, you might be looking at the different hospital networks. You might be looking at the different hospital doctors' organizations. You might be looking at, you know, what the insurers are doing. You kind of scan to make sure that your database is really, you know, that you really own the database. You didn't do anything with it yet. But do you have all the major players in front of you in your database staring back at you so that when you make your move, you didn't miss anybody? And then what often happens is that you make sure that you have access. Before you make your play and say, here's what we want to do, here's what we need from you, you may have to hire somebody who has some clout, has some expertise, has some power. You may need to change how you do your electronic communications so that you can back up what you're talking about on a day-to-day basis on the phone electronically really quickly. Other people are going to be watching once you make your move. Now, let me talk about some things that I've seen. When people are introducing, companies are introducing a new product to a segmented market, I've seen some people get tripped up because they didn't do the research. And the second place I see that they get tripped up is they can't remember what they're leveraging. I mean, you might have thought you were leveraging your expertise, and then when the more you get into what's going on in an industry, you realize what you don't know, and you don't feel like you're such an expert anymore. So one of the things I'd advise you to do is you got to keep track of what you think you're leveraging. It's almost like writing a journal to yourself. That works really well. And if there's a team involved, having some kind of record keeping for the meetings is important, and I've seen some entrepreneurial companies not do that, and they can't remember where they started. Within a year, they look back and they go, now, wait a minute, how did we get here again? And it does matter, because what you've told the marketplace and where you're headed, the journey you've been on, you're having people come with you. You're kind of a magnet to what they're, you know, who they are. You're not going to remember what you told them a year ago if you don't document it. So if you choose this method of being a driving force, it's almost like being a force of change, kind of being a change agent within an industry, you need some pretty good records to remember what you said so that you can update people. So newsletters of here's where we are now, here's where we're going, here's what's next, you know, take people with you, educate them as you learn is a good technique to do. So, all right, one of the things is you think you have some expertise and then you realize you don't, then you're going to need some, a lot of times people who are trying this technique need advisory boards because they'll open up a Pandora's box of something that they didn't know was there. I'll give you an example from a distributor client of mine. They did basically industrial products, really, really good with the catalogs. Man, these guys could make a product move faster because they analyzed it down to the minutia. They knew exactly what would sell in the upper left-hand corner of a catalog compared to the middle page, you know, the middle of the right-hand page. I mean, they knew that stuff. And they were trying to leverage their real knowledge of direct mail and of catalog placement. And they got into some other products. Now, since they were industrial, they thought, okay, let's leverage our client base and our catalog and our, you know, direct mail marketing. And they looked in, they did some research, and they looked into, all right, one of the things that's current is the handling of hazardous waste. That's really tricky. So why don't we leverage our direct mail capabilities and our mailing list for industrial customers? And we'll get into stuff like rubber gloves. Well, you can tell where I'm going. Once they open up that door to say, you know, what do you need? Here's what we could do. It asked, there were questions about regulations. There were questions about, you know, storage. There were questions about how far they could go. That's okay. Just know that, you know, probably never going to know enough. When you open another door, the things that somebody else has been doing, there's a lot more to learn, and make sure that you have a learning attitude when you do it. In their case, in this particular client's case, they decided to back off of the hazardous stuff because it was so loaded. And they felt like their expertise would have to become understanding regulations, dealing with the government, that type of tracking, and it just, that didn't appeal to them. So they backed off. Now, someone else would have made the different decision. They would have said, it's worth the money, bring in some expertise, bring in some new systems, and let's do it. Another company, a distributor of parts for computer printers, at the time that they started doing it was Dot Matrix. Okay, so now they got this call center, and they've got inventory management, and they've got parts control. They know how to do this. So they started to sell actual printers, and they now have negotiated these arrangements with all the different carriers. You can, you know, think about the manufacturers, they carry them. And that was a little bit of a stretch, but mostly it was the same. It was the same kind of customers that every once in a while, they don't need a part, they just need a new thing. They just need a whole new machine, especially the way things are done now. People aren't looking to upgrade, they just want the new thing. That wasn't such a big change. They were able to manage that. Then they decided shrinking margins are such that this is ridiculous. We're never going to make any money on parts and even the printers. What we're going to do is we're going to get into repair. Now, all right, now you can tell where I'm going. Talk about different. And so they went and they said, now we're not going to be able to homegrown it because we don't know how to do this. So we're going to acquire an existing business that could do the repairs. And we've already got the customers on the phone. They're whining and crying and complaining about the printer and trying to make their minds up about whether or not to buy a new thing. Sometimes it's not the printer, it's their computer. Then we'll have the service unit available to, you know, to deploy. Well, talk about open up Pandora's box. They didn't know about billing multipliers. They don't know about marketing of service. They don't know about staffing it. They don't know the geographic limitations. They got their hands full. And one of the mistakes that they made was to think that somebody internal to the company could learn it fast enough. And my, you know, my intervention or my recommendations were, whoa, it's not okay to just acquire the technologists that are in the background that do the service. You've got to have somebody at the top of this that knows how to attract those customers, knows how to keep them, because they started to bleed clients within the first month after they bought the firm. You are going to end up having new things that are in front of you that you weren't expecting. So, you know, ask yourself if you're leveraging your expertise. Are you leveraging your customer base? Are you leveraging a product or approach? Definitely do the research so that you know that you can move quickly and keep moving. Build in some communication so that the people who are that you're trying to bring with you know enough to come with you on the journey. Be open to the fact that they're probably going to ask you questions. They're almost annoying. Some of my clients have said that. They're almost annoying what they ask. Oh, how about this? And did you think of that? And did you do this? And did you do that? And you're barely handling what you've already put in play. But those questions are worth thousands and thousands of dollars of market research. That's just the kind of input that you want. So if you can build in a mechanism to welcome questions, some people, create seminars. Or it's just a forum for the back and forth information on the surface, it looks like you're providing, okay, here's where we are on our product and here's where we're going, so everybody understands it. But a lot of the purpose of it is to get information from the people who are users. Another example is a company that that went on this kind of journey is a self-storage company. They know how to build the buildings. They were in construction. All right. What would be comparable? Kind of low employee, you know, low staff demand. Depends on the building. Somebody comes up. It's not frequent. They decided they would look at car washes, the self-use car washes. All right. Think about it. You're involved with soap, so you got the regulations. You've got more employees working at a car wash with heavy, effort. And you've got workers' comp claims. They really had more people issues suddenly. It wasn't just the building, and it wasn't just whether or not the machine worked and the door opened. It's definitely related to people a lot more than they thought. So as you introduce new products and services to an existing market, especially a fragmented one, remember that you're trying to herd cats. And that has to become one of your major expertise areas, is how do you continue to herd cats and enjoy it? So after the break, I'll tell you what we're doing. I'm going to be introducing Bob Cook. He is of STOPS, which is Specialized Transportation and Translation for Outpatient Services. Talk about a combination. We're not talking about just, the vans that move people around. They're going to outpatients, patient clinics. They're in language translation. Let that sink in before I go to the break and introduce him. And how would somebody get into medical transportation and language translation? And how would they get all the insurance companies' attention to be? Wait till you hear the story. And pick up on what I've said in the beginning of the program. Listen to how he's done it. This is Aldana Ambler, and we will be right back.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The defendant, having been found guilty, is sentenced to a term of 5 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 5 years of walking home alone from school.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and today we're going to be introducing Robert Cook. You there, Bob?
Yes, I am.
Well, hello.
Hello.
He is the CEO of STOPS. Now, you don't normally say STOPS, do you?
If I don't want to tie my tongue up with the entire name.
Did I say it right when I said it, spelled it out?
Yes, you did.
Okay. So now tell us just briefly, what's your company do? How large is it? All that kind of stuff. Give me your sales pitch.
Well, our company is currently pressing 10 to 15 million a year. We have about 70 employees and 2,000 vendors throughout the United States.
Wow.
We supply transportation, medical transport, and language services to the insurance industry throughout the United States.
And the business is how old?
Started in September of 1999, so we're looking on about our sixth year of business.
So you're obviously on the Inc. 500 for rapidly growing companies, given the metrics you just gave us.
Yes, this is our second year on the Inc. 500.
That's pretty cool. Was that one of your goals?
At the time, no. Although when we began to grow the company, we saw it as an opportunity and took advantage of that.
Sure. It helped publicize it. I don't even know if that's how I found you, but it might have been. We get names sent to us, and I reach out to people I've met and met at speeches and things. I don't even remember exactly where I found your name, so it might have been that. All right, so now transportation, you're talking about one of those minivans that takes somebody from their home to the clinic. Tell me what it is.
Well, it could be. It's anything from a sedan service, which could be one of a local vendor or one of our own people that picks up a person and takes them to a therapy appointment simply because, say, they had a broken arm, they couldn't drive,
mm-hmm.
all the way up to an air ambulance, a Learjet taking someone from one end of the country to the other to be treated in another facility.
Okay. So now how'd you get into that? Because, you know, and what do you mean by fragmented industry? Because it sounds like you've got some vehicles, but give us a little bit of how'd you get into this.
Well, one of our shareholders and one of the founders of the company, Bob Jarvis, began reviewing some files in another company that he ran and noticed that there was an increased purchasing of this type of product. And he had noticed that there was a lot of opportunity, having known the individuals that were running these other companies and did not believe they had a lot of expertise in the insurance industry, which is something that the group that we put together had. It was mostly being ran by people that were in the transport business or people that were in the language service business, and they really had no knowledge of what their client really was looking for from a vendor.
So a client being the insurance company?
Yes, a client being
okay.
the insurance company.
So now does Mr. Jarvis work in the insurance companies and he could see this line item on their budgets or what?
He was working he was running another company that he ran for many years and
mm-hmm.
was able to see some the line items were being purchased, doing some file review
yeah.
for them. Nothing that was confidential, but it's a part of the job that he was being hired to do, and gave me a call one day and said, you know, these companies are doing quite well, and I think we can beat them in the marketplace.
Okay.
So he formed a company and did so.
All right, so you just smelled some money. You said these guys are spending more and more. What made you think you could do anything different or better?
Knowing that the ownership mix of the major competitors in that marketplace had no previous experience in the insurance industry, we didn't believe they had significant knowledge about their customers.
And so the expertise was not the driving or the translation. It was, we know what really makes the insurance companies tick.
Exactly. I mean,
okay.
the product itself, the services, important, logistical, and other types and language services are...
Well, yeah, it's a lot.
...to educate oneself in, but it is easier to hire those types of expertise than it is to find people with 20, 30, 40 years of experience in the insurance industry itself.
So give me an example of something you would know that somebody who has a van company doesn't know.
Well, I would know that the carrier is more concerned about decreasing their continuing liability in a claim.
Okay.
That it's very important to them that you carry a great deal of insurance, that you have a very high quality of customer service and keep the injured party or the claimant happy, but also that you protect their main concern as a major corporation is to protect their company.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of insurance business is an adversarial system.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, even though the claimant needs to be taken care of, the claimant may be at odds with the insurance carrier at some point.
Yep.
So there, you have to understand that balance.
So are they also looking for you to find the least expensive way to accomplish that? I mean, I know this sounds obvious, but a lot of the people I've seen, you know, if they own a fleet of limos, that's all they can do. And they're not going to find another version of that to save you money.
I think you're right. And what is so silly at times, we hear our competitors go, well, I went this way because it's quicker to get the person to their appointment instead of going the other way, which is less miles. Well, if the insurance company pays by the mile, they really don't care that it took 20 minutes longer.
Gotcha.
And if you add that up into hundreds and hundreds upon thousands of trips a day, it comes
mm-hmm.
into a significant amount of money.
So what was the fragmented nature of the industry?
Well,
what's that about?
Primarily, over the years, the buyer, which would
mm-hmm.
be an adjuster or case manager in an insurance setting, have been buying from local services directly, having mm-hmm. problems because of the type of billing that comes into insurance carriers. They don't want to have bills from thousands and thousands of different
Oh, yeah. Companies. I mean, just the administrivia.
It is very, very difficult, and small mm-hmm. bills at that. And mm-hmm. There's no set regulation on how these bills would be processed. They might come in on the backs of napkins, for that matter.
Wow.
And they were out there purchasing at the lowest level mm-hmm. and sometimes getting the service done, sometimes not, possibly mm-hmm. as low as maybe a 70-80% success ratio, and just wasting a lot of time. But that's where the buying was being done. It was all being done on a local level. And then many years ago, well, let's say 10, the insurance industry began consolidating its operations.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't as many local offices throughout the country. They are.
So you piggybacked on the consolidation of the insurance industry and said, why don't we have you're like the Walmart of this kind of service. You said, let's do it on a national scale and save you money.
Exactly. We knew what they wanted on a national scale, and we're the first company in our type to go nationally.
Now, how are you ready? If you don't mind my asking, how are you ready to do that? Not everybody is, because that's why it's so fragmented in the first place.
Exactly. Well, we were ready in that we knew who the clients were, so we had some buying power. We knew we could get some buying power through mm-hmm. through our knowledge of the industry. Went out and gathered in some national clients. And knowing that in today's technological world, if I'm not in the same city as you, you might as well be on the other side of the country. I can still do the buying.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's
a lot of purchasers are law. You know, between New York and India, and somebody doesn't even know.
Exactly. There was mm-hmm. and I think that was a barrier that a lot of these other providers weren't really to understand
mm-hmm.
that there was no barrier at all.
Mhm. Okay. So you go after a big insurance company. Was there a big account that made the biggest difference for you?
Well,
you know, landing, you know, Hartford Insurance or AIG or some big company, what?
Well, actually, we landed, of course, all of the major carriers. And
wow.
Was the necessity of any one of them wasn't the most important thing. As we started our company, we looked at our client list as it grew over the first couple of years, and we ended up with 600 different carriers mm-hmm. buying from us out of 900 offices.
You must have had an insane period of time, though, with, even if you conceptually understood this, 2,000 vendors just right there. How did you handle that quickly without falling on your face?
Well, it was a very manual process. So we threw a lot of people at it. And
mm-hmm.
eventually we became so large that we had to begin writing our own programs.
I can believe it.
And then the software was difficult
mm-hmm.
because we are in a business that is odd that it has several buyers. There's the insurance carrier as a client.
Yep.
The patient is obviously a client that needs to be taken care of. There may also be another intermediary in there somewhere, a case management company.
Now, did you discover you had multiple words for those things, like the end user versus the, you know, like when you say the word customer in your business, it won't mean anything.
Exactly, and that's what it was hard for some of the smaller vendors to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, my customer is who pays my bill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the only easy way to keep it. The patient is an important player in this as a customer also, and must be taken care of in an extraordinarily professional manner.
I've seen a lot of my clients that have gone through this have conflict internally about, you know, who's the client.
Oh, exactly.
You know, is it insurance company? Is it the patient? You know, mm-hmm. is it the adjuster? And mm-hmm. where their alliances are, and they can have some real good arguments internally about, wait a second, we're compromising too far. Did that show up like in the first year?
No, ma'am.
Not right away?
Not right away, simply because one of our other shareholders, an ex-claims manager, and who has worked with me for many years, and he was able to individually train our people to understand the industry. And as we grew, actually, it became more of a problem because he found it harder and harder to get in front of the employees as we grew. And now we're actually going back, and he's doing a lot more of the training where he can bring that knowledge to them. And you don't have to be negative to one party or the other. You just have to remember that you're neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You're treating your customer well, and you're treating your patient well, but you're not there to be giving advice and to move a claim along. You're there to supply whatever service they're giving.
Mm-hmm. And do that the best you can.
Yes, Yes, ma'am, and stand back from it. I mean, many people are seriously injured, and we have a lot of sympathy for them, but in the end, you will have to be a neutral party here.
I understand you're heavily into the workers' comp arena, right?
Yes, ma'am, about 95% of our business, so very heavily.
No kidding. Now, why is that? Did you know that?
Well, yes, ma'am, we did, and that's because the services we provide, for the most part, are only compensated by or paid for by insurance carriers under workers' compensation.
Okay.
If you have a regular health policy and you have a broken leg,
mm-hmm.
you need to go to therapy, well, it's on you. And the only time your transportation is paid for is if the lights are on the ambulance.
Okay.
So there's no payer. We do some private pay, but generally, knowing our expertise are in the workers' comp industry, we've remained in that, which is about a $400 million or better marketplace for us.
And there's a whole lot of paperwork, and there's attorneys, and there's estate people, and but you know, you got even more paperwork because of what you're talking about.
Certainly, but it is a guaranteed payer, and also everyone mm-hmm. that runs a business has to have it.
Right, right, right. Now, in the journey that you've had here, I mean, as everybody can hear this, you know, you went from, like, basically a handful of people to 70,
mm-hmm.
and basically no volume to 10, 15 million. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so this has been a pretty fast ramp. How have you managed the communication? Let's loop back to the beginning of the show. How have you, you know, how did you technically, physically manage reaching out to all those insurance companies so quickly and reach out to the vendors so fast?
Well, obviously the customer was we began at the top of the corporate ladder, mm-hmm. as it were, with the vendors or with our client base.
You're right. It sounds funny. It sounds almost obvious. But you know how many people that try to do this, they go to a purchasing agent or they go too low.
Yeah.
It makes me think of that book, Selling to Vito, the very important top officer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your sale had to have been almost, you know, what I call the C sale. You know, you were selling it to the CFOs and the CEOs, right?
Well, yes, ma'am. Well, actually, these corporations are obviously so huge that it's under that. But it is the top buyer for those corporations and showing them the value.
Yeah.
And then asking them or having them pass it on down, we actually began the consolidation saying, look, there were no lists for our services we provided with these companies. They could,
mm-hmm.
the buyer could use anyone they wanted. We went through them and said, look, you need to have a list.
Mm-hmm.
You spend a lot of money here, and we know what you like. And you know, you may not just want to use us, but you might want to just pick one or two. And we were able to convince, for the most part, all the major carriers that was a good idea.
Was one of the benefits of going with you, not just the national part, but that you would screen, you know, these small companies of the vendors. And if they didn't pass kind of like your standards and requirements, they probably weren't up to what the customer is going to want.
Exactly. That was very
true. That was one of the benefits, right?
One of the very large benefits, and also insuring on top of whatever the smaller company could not insure. We insure $5 million on every transport, and that just the average
company. Oh, they can't. No, there's no way. Well, when we get back, we're going to talk about some other things in this journey, because if you're thinking of really being a fast driver to unfragment an industry, coordination is the key. This is the Grow Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-888-ALDONA. ALDONNA, thegrowthstrategist.com, achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
I know, being a college freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m., and then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus, then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have two lectures that go through lunch, Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology, pre-med, and finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Tune into Small Business Trends Radio with Anita Campbell every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Each week, Anita and expert guests provide a big picture view of the small business market, identifying the trends and major events driving the robust growth of the small business market. Whether you are a small business owner or a company of any size desiring to sell small businesses or reach the small business market with a product or service, Small Business Trends Radio is your resource for trends that influence the global small business market. Right here on the Bottom Line for Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Oh, welcome back to The Growth Strategist. I am Aldana Ambler, and today I'm interviewing Robert Cook of STOPS. Now, this man is in, you know, transportation of patients to clinics and things like that, but also translation services. And I just want that to sink in, because that's a heavy, you know, people-intensive business here. And he made this move, you know, it's a five-year process here for them to be up at like $15 million. They've got a run rate of $15 million now. I can't help but think about the amount of cost that this much has taken. You know, how are you ready to just say we're national overnight? Is this organically funded? Did you get outside financing? How did you pay for all this?
Well, it's organically funded.
Wow. How'd you do that?
Well, we had a couple of other businesses at the time also, myself and two of the other owners, or actually three of the other owners, and one of them had another business too. So we consolidated our funds as best we could, and
all right,
that was part of the skills that we utilized. The other would be the ability to turn your receivables in an appropriate manner, and you run a tight ship.
Yes. I was going to say, you had to really do some homework about the pricing and the cost, so that your margin would make sense early on.
Yes, we did, and we made some mistakes in that area. And, you know,
like what? Oh, no, to say it's past tense. Who cares? What'd you do that when you look back, you go, I can't believe we did that.
Well, you can put together a national price strategy, and you start looking at what cost might be in Montana to get an advanced life support unit going somewhere, and you may be shocked to know that there's only one available in, you know, a two county area, and you know it's. And it may cost you a few thousand dollars more than you're able to build.
Well, you started in Florida, right?
Actually, no. The market was so strangled in Florida with the only large providers that we went to California first.
Oh, I got it backwards.
We went out there and came back across the country and then honestly retook the marketplace down in Florida after we had already obtained the market share we were looking for from the national providers.
And the translation side of it is because you have such a diverse population related to the patients, correct?
Well, yes, it's we have found, and as did others in our industry, that many, as much as a third of any patient group that needs this service, needs this transport service, is probably non-English speaking, and therefore would also need the language service. And to bundle that together just became cost effective.
So over time, you'd know what percentage of the budget's going to need to be spent on translators and people learning it. In certain states, it's going to be different.
Exactly. And we actually even break down our old P&L down on those service lines.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what are some of the turning points in this? I mean, the first big account might be, but what else? When did you start to have it work?
Well, I think the first big accounts with any company is a huge turning point.
Yeah.
With us, I think the struggle that we went through and we were able to turn around, we brought in some large scale and some high price management that we really needed. We found that as the company grew, the largest company I had previously ran was only a few million dollars, a $3-4 million
mm-hmm.
a year company.
Mm-hmm.
And my chief of operations was obviously was at a vice president level with a large carrier.
Mm-hmm.
My couple of other partners have also been in management and ran companies. But when we got to the $5 to $10 million range, we found that we were spinning our wheels a lot.
And I bet.
Went out and were able to find a Jerry Nagel, who was our CFO, and brought him in, and been with large corporations before. And he was honest enough to say he had never been with a company that had grown, I think we had a 2,500% growth over our first four
mm-hmm.
years.
Not everybody's been on that ride.
Exactly. But he
mm-hmm.
was with a lot of large, stable corporations, met a lot of fine CEOs, and it really knew how to make sure we stayed on task and focused.
Mm-hmm. Well, typically, you know, the same managers that you're going to need in the early stages where you're developing a database, figuring out the technology, you know, contacting the insurance companies, that whole setup kind of stage, their personalities of driving implementation and figuring things out, they won't necessarily be the managers that you're going to need at more of a maintenance, you know, status. Did you have to change your top group a lot, you know, completely or something?
Yes. We did, and that can be difficult. I mean, we have a company that enjoys working with people, and we enjoy our employees. And
yeah.
And what do you do with someone that's very good at one level but can't move to the next, yet there's no position to stay? Obviously, they've got to move on, and that kind of decision is the hardest thing that I do.
Well, a lot of the clients that I've dealt with, they get into a loyalty cycle, where somebody's been with them a long time, maybe they were even part of the first ownership pattern, and they can't grow fast enough, or it's not their career direction. And the angst that they go through about, is it time to let go? Is it time to move, you know, help this person find another career and not, you know, like you say, spin your wheels? I find it hard. I'm a sucker for potential. So, you know, just, you know, having that kind of decision, that's a tough thing to do. Are you the one that drives that, or someone else the one that says to you, you know, we really got to deal with this?
No, I'm the one that drives that.
Oh, you're the hard ass, huh? You're the one that does it.
Yeah.
Did you know that before you got into that role?
Yes, I did, and because I had made mistakes in that way before. I knew that those were part of the errors I made when I ran my first company in my 20s.
Oh, so you made some of your mistakes before this.
I knew.
So you were more ready for this than most people, I got to tell you, because I've seen some folks that just decide they've got a product, they've got a hot new idea, and they're kind of cocky. You didn't go through a cocky stage in the beginning of this?
No, because I had already been through the cocky stage.
That was honest.
I knew that there's a long fall from a high spot ready for just about everybody.
You don't want to tell me what you had a problem with, do you?
Well, it was again not putting the right people in the right spot as a company. I had another fast growth company to
mm-hmm.
several million by the time I was in my 31 years old, and
mm-hmm.
and did not know that good advice was given and wasn't taken by me, and
mm-hmm.
and I should have been more responsive to the needs of the business and less to my personal feelings about how
mm-hmm.
how long a person, how loyal they've been to the company.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because if, let's say, a few years ago, for whatever reason, I would have asked, you know, you would have asked me to look at your company. I know some of the questions I would have wanted to ask is looking at the executive team. I probably would want to know pretty quickly who's over finance. You know, do you have a controller? Is it a CFO? And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can't transform those people. You know, somebody who's a really good controller is not necessarily on a career track to becoming a CFO. It's so different.
So true.
You know, so I probably would have looked at that. And I'm not even actually talking about you listening, you know, to the listeners. If you're on this journey, you know, Bob's sounding like, you know, they're pretty cool now. They're stable and they're managing this. But the journey to get where he is what I'm trying to focus on. And a couple of the roles that I see that get in trouble a lot, say somebody else tried to do what you did, One of the places they probably would have fumbled is the coordination point with the drivers that are out in the field. Because there's so many different, you know, these mom-and-pop shops that have a different way of, you know, here's how we dispatch and here's how we treat people, and we're not going to let that nasty old national company tell us what to do. And managing the actual drivers, that interface would be really critical to success.
Well, you're right. And what we and it ended up with three different people till we found we went out and found a professional manager, an MBA out of a he came out of Tennessee, and he started with us, Troy Renfro, and he just redid the entire department.
Yeah, I don't know why it wouldn't be needed to be redone, and that's kind of what I'm saying.
Oh, it had to be. Growth in it, and it was a very complex set of circumstances when you're trying to perform five or six different levels of transport in 50 different states.
And to be qualified to be one of your drivers or one of your, you know, local companies, they have to meet some standards. They didn't buy into a franchise, so they say, who the heck are you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that right? And not every exec is willing to say, here's what we have to do, and know that you have that clout. And in the first year you're in business, you don't have that kind of clout. So they, you know, how do you stand up to them? And what are some of your current challenges?
Well, our current challenges are to continue this level of growth and still supply the same type of personalized service. These clients, even though I have several thousand buyers, they expect to be treated very specially on...
Oh, like they're the only one. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you would think it was their own money.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you know, they get hired to have that attitude.
Exactly.
And you probably have some competitors that are looking at this and nipping at your tail and saying, well, all right, so they're national, but we're better.
Exactly. They are paid to watch the carrier's money and what's spent on every product. They expect to be treated well. These individuals buy $100,000, $50,000 worth of different types of services each in every buyer.
Yeah.
So they do control a lot of potential buying power.
I would imagine the account management is always a challenge because it evolves a little bit. You can get complacent thinking that you know that client, but then they modify what they need. Okay, now everybody listening to this, think about if you were in his shoes, what are your probable challenges? Just see if you can get into the mindset, see if it's similar to your own. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
When business is in your blood and you need answers, get connected. Call 1-866-233-7861.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality, adopt transition into your personal power portfolio, and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today I'm interviewing Bob Cook, a gentleman who runs STOPS, which is an organization that provides medical transportation and translation services. Now, before the break, we were talking about, you know, what kind of issues do you think a CEO like him of a company with 70 employees and 2,000 vendors and a run rate of about $15 million, what do you think he's facing? And let me think out loud about stuff I've seen of companies in that kind of situation. Now, it's a five-year-old business, remind you that. I find that people who've been on that rapid run, they get almost emotionally attached to each other. In a way, it's almost like a family, and there's an intensity about it. And people become very opinionated about their area of the business. And yet they don't want to say something that's going to hurt or upset the other person. And it's not a male-female thing. I just find that the speed that things run, that they grow, it changes how people view one another. They don't want to upset the apple cart. They don't want to be the one that picked the fight. So managing the executive team often is a challenge. Now, how much consensus, how much autocracy, how much, you know, come on, put it on the table, let's deal with it. That would be one. Second issue is, with, I would think about, like I mentioned before, is the financial management. That, you know, are you absolutely on top of the money? And I find some people are a little reticent to bring in the high-level controller soon enough. Another thing I've seen is just the scale, the scope of it. It can get complacent. You can, you know, because you're so busy, you're running as fast as you can in those kind of businesses, taking care of everybody. That you're it can be a risk to run on your past experience. In other words, if you're busy leveraging expertise that you had 5 years ago and it's working and you're making a lot of money, there is this misimpression you don't have to learn anymore. And sometimes there isn't money set aside for R&D and the development of the new thing or interviewing and surveying and learning new subtleties about the customer. Fourth thing I can think of is that the marketing would be tricky, because if you've got all these customers all lined up and you're the big kahuna and everybody's watching you, you're living in a glass house, so you might not know how much to spend on your marketing versus what would it buy you anyway. You know, right? So those are a couple things I can think of. Am I close?
Oh, they're all right in line with the issues that we have to deal with on a daily basis. And
I bet your executive committee meetings are fun.
They are boisterous, to say the least.
Good.
We are quite frank with each other. We've known each other for the most part. Myself, Donna Lindsay, James Williams, Bob Jarvis, and now Jerry Nagel,
mm-hmm.
The four founders of the company, knew each other for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we still find ourselves falling into the role at times where you don't want to upset someone or say something because they are because of the closeness of your relationship.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
But the good thing about that is I'm considered quite cold at times, and you know, we'll bring it out in the forefront. Not that I'll be right, but at least we'll all get together and we're going to have a little shouting match about, you
uh-huh.
know, what needs to be done. And trying to build a consensus on the team can be tough.
Yeah.
And
sometimes I've seen consensus end up being the one dissenting vote can slow things down and stop it.
Well,
you haven't had that, have you?
We have had that. And sometimes that one dissenting vote has been the right way to go. You need to listen to that. Sometimes if there's a lot of strong personalities in a room, or at least one very strong personality, you know, he can sway. I can sometimes sway a vote to the wrong way. That's why I try myself to keep my mouth closed until near the end. Because if not, sometimes people won't speak their mind.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you could dominate it and you didn't want to.
Exactly, and that can be very detrimental to the company. I've found that, you know, this company runs much smoother, better than, you know, the other companies I've ran, and the reason mm-hmm. is because of the input of the other owners, of the other shareholders.
Mm-hmm. But now I hope the listeners can hear, you need some intensity around that table running something this large and this rapidly growing. So what's your decision related to the marketing side of things? Okay, so, you know, you nationalized and, you know, you unfragmented it, you're the big kahuna. Are you investing in marketing, or are you going to coast?
Well, we're investing in marketing. However, trying to determine whether it's a field strategy or focusing more in the office, which is where we're going.
Gotcha.
The dynamic in of our client's office is different these days. The real estate, protect the real estate inside that office a lot more mm-hmm. these days. It used to be a very much Wild West about getting in there and mm-hmm. and marketing inside their offices itself. Now they're, or at least our client base, which are the major carriers, are mm-hmm. really frowned upon that. And I can see why. Productivity drops when you got people walking around in their
so
office.
So you used to be able to walk in, do a seminar, glad hand, have a sales appointment, and you could reach them, and now you can't.
Well, you could go in every day. You could go in there every day with breakfast foods or whatever you wanted, lunch every afternoon, and it was, it was almost a madhouse. To us, it's
not now. Okay, now there's one of your changes over the 5 years is they go, no, I got to get work done.
Yep, and actually, it's quite tight these days, and for us, that's better.
So now what do? You do seminars or what do you do?
We do seminars. We try and cut our visits down to either monthly or quarterly, work through. Also, when they call us for the service, there's that opportunity there to increase our sales. We do have an LLC that's also very fast growing, and understanding as we bring in new products to be able to get that out to our clients. We want to go in and give them possible educational opportunities through CEUs, which
You have the advantage of being a preferred vendor already, and so you're couching it in the framework of servicing the account rather than coming in for a cold sales call.
Exactly.
Now, do you have any issues in attracting top talent? You and everybody else. That's not easy. How do you do that?
Well, we've been using search firms. I have Donna Lindsay, our previous human resource executive, has retired somewhat and was taken over by Donna Pfizer, and she's a professional at HR too. And they're out there beating the bushes to bring in. Bring in good people, and also we're using some outside firms. It's expensive, but it's difficult. We do compete against a Space Center where our call center is located, and we've had to really outlay some cash to be able to bring in the type of talent that we need to go to the next level.
Yeah. It's a challenge for everybody, because if you're growing that fast, you need bodies, and you don't just need warm bodies. You need people who can think, and at the risk of sounding like I'm endorsing something, I find that I am repeatedly recommending certain things when folks are in this kind of mode. And if you guys haven't looked at the top grading interview process that the Jeff Smart company, that's really good, because the whole process really has enough interaction in the interviews that you can tell if there's a philosophical fit between that person and your company. So for some of the key roles, if you haven't looked into that, just a thought.
Well, we've been using one of our executives, Jerry, is very versed in the DISC method.
Yes.
And he uses that.
That's good, Sam.
It's a very good method, and although the interview process tends to take about a lifetime and a half,
I understand that though.
But we do find that we are getting people that fit better into the positions that we're bringing them into, utilizing that method.
Now, I would think one of the other tricky things that you're dealing with before we go to close here is that you probably find yourself selling to some previous competitors, no?
Oh, we do sell to some of our competitors.
That's a funny feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. Many of our other competitors, they consider that a very viable market. Myself, I feel if my competitor is buying from me, and I'm selling to them, I'm just not selling to the end user well enough, and I should be out there attracting that business myself and cutting out an additional middleman. However, we have a certain expertise now that these companies wish to tap into and to help grow their business.
Yep.
And it's always a battle. Do you want that million or whatever dollars worth of business, even though they know they're a competitor of yours?
One of the risks is that you teach them too much.
Exactly.
You know, now I'm going to need to close the show, but I want to end with something you're probably not expecting. I want to invite the listeners to log on to the show again at your convenience, and I want you to listen again, because I think Bob is a good role model and an example of continuous learning. There's an attitude. There's subtle ways in how he's answered the questions. Things like he lists the names of his people. You know, you got to get past yourself. in this kind of organization with rapid growth and see where the stars have been and the people that put you on the map, and you can't do this alone. And, you know, take other people with you who want you to succeed is one of the quotes that I use. You know, it's something I say that people quote me on all the time. This is a guy who's working on his MBA through Duke, right?
Yes, ma'am.
See, now, and a lot of people in your situation wouldn't be doing that. And I just want everybody to think about, you know, if you're going to say, we're going to leverage expertise, sometimes people get a little cocky with that. Oh, I'm smart and I'm an industry leader. And you create this big company and you got all these different people around you. And there is a humility that's lost. And I actually think the people who succeed, the ones that I see that can make the transition from being, you know, the salesperson to actually being the president, to actually being the CEO, have that embracing attitude around learning, continuous learning. Replay the show, folks, and let me know what you think. Listen subtly to the ways he gives himself away as being a humble learner. Bob, thank you for being a role model. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldon Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.